on here. So anyway, we're wanting to talk about a few things. And first, you want to talk about compost making.
Yeah, compost making. We're getting into the fall of the year, I think. Weatherman has not been very cooperative on that area. It still feels very much like summer with the humidity and the heat. But I noticed on the drive over this morning, a little colony or group or family of pitcher sage. Pitcher sage is a native plant that you'll see out in the pastures, meadows. Very pretty blue flower, and it was in bloom. And that's a good signal, a good sign that fall's approaching, rapidly approaching. And also see a lot of yellow flowers, the sunflowers, the Maximilian sunflower and the goldenrod, all in bloom. Very pretty fall. Yellows are pretty much a dominant fall color as far as the flower colors out in the pastures. But also we get a lot of other colors too, and another pretty plant that's going to be coming into bloom with the right color, purple flower. It's kind of a purple flower. It's kind of a Leavenworth aryngio. It's a plant that's in the pastures, the dry pastures, from here in the Coffeyville area on up into the Buffalo, Kansas area. I see a lot of that. It looks like a thistle, but it's not. It's actually in the carrot, I believe carrot family, right, correct. And but you never think carrot family, no. It looks different, and I think Wendy has seen that particular plant. But yeah, since fall's in the air, or soon to be in the air, and we're thinking about things that end of the season, we got a lot of plant material to clean up in the yard. And of course, in October, November, we're going to have leaves falling off the trees, and we got to go someplace with those that vegetation, especially also in the garden, the garden debris, flower beds. So one of the things we can do is make compost. It's not for everybody. Compost making is not for everybody, but for the avid gardener and the person who is really concerned about the recycling and taking care of the earth and putting a really good material back into the soil that helps improve the organic matter content and the benefits associated with the organic matter going in the soil, a better growing condition for the plants themselves, adds a few minerals back to the soil as well. Making compost, fairly simple. You throw it in a pile and let it rot. That's about the simplest you can get. And there's some people that write big books about making compost and probably have to do a lot of yoga exercises before you can go out and start turning the compost pile. I'm not into that game. I just throw it together. The conditions that are necessary for decomposition, of course, organic residues, we've got a lot of that. We can mix them together, and somebody talks about green material and brown material, and you have to get the right blend of those materials together. Yeah, okay, you're making a big guess. Just throw them together. If you want it to go a little bit faster, add a little bit of high nitrogen fertilizer, like a turf grass fertilizer. It's great. Make sure it doesn't have any herbicide or a pesticide in it. We want to have just a straight fertilizer. That nitrogen actually is what's going to help the microbes out there, going to make the or decompose the material, because microbes do, the microbes we're talking about, a whole bunch of different critters, fungi, bacteria, and things like that, that actually work on the organic residues. But they do need some nitrogen, because they're going to assimilate that into their bodies so to speak, a body of a microbe is a lot different than ours. They're going to use that to build proteins and things that are associated with their multiplication. And they can really work on the organic residues and break them down fairly quickly if they have available nitrogen. The thing that's really missing in the brown materials that you're going to decompose is nitrogen. So that will slow the process down. So we need a kind of a blend of brown and green materials if you want to work on that. If you really want to get technical and have an analyzing equipment, you want the carbon and nitrogen ratio to be around 30 to 1 for fastest decomposition, fastest compost making. A little side kick on this one, some people say, we got to get that compost pile temperature up to about 160 degrees to kill all the bad stuff, the nasty stuff in the pile. That doesn't work because there's a lot of areas of the pile that don't get up to 160 degrees, so pasteurization of the compost pile does never occurs. You can get some reduction in the nasty stuff in a compost pile, but really what really gets rid of the nasty stuff is time and that adequate decomposition of the material where the substrates are broken down so it no longer supports any of the material that would go back into the garden and infect the plants. So the amount of time that it takes to get a good compost can exceed a year or two. So I do composting on a 2-year cycle, and by that time it's broken down so much it looks like soil. It actually has a lot of soil in it. But we got the carbon and nitrogen ratio, okay? So we got a pile of material. The other things that are needed for making compost: air, oxygen. The microbes are going to use oxygen. So we talk about, we don't want to have a waterlogged pile. Very seldom does that ever occur. And we like to have lots of air in the pile. Well, you don't have to have a whole lot. I just stomp my compost pile down so I can get it into the small area that I want. And I let it it take care of itself. Diffusion gets into the pile. Very seldom do you have an issue where you don't have enough air. And that usually occurs when you have a lot of green, wet material that just packs down real tight and it excludes air, and then you get the stinky pile. So in that case, what you want to do is if you have a stinky pile, work in some dry material, some brown material, and turn it so you get air back into it. And that, of course, the stinky pile comes from anaerobic bacteria that start to kick in and decompose organic residues, and that's something that we don't want. So very seldom we have a lack of air. The other ingredient for compost making is water, moisture. Soil microbes that decompose need a film of water to do their chemical reactions, so that adequate levels of moisture really accelerate the decomposition process. So we got air, we got material, the brown and the green material, we got oxygen, any other ingredients, time. Compost doesn't occur in just a day or two. It takes a bit of time. So you have to have a place to put the materials so it has time to decompose. And of course, once in a while, you should turn it so the stuff on the outside gets into the insides where the action is really better because the environment is more suitable for the microbes. So we take care of all of that and we got time. You'll be surprised. You have a large pile of material initially. It shrinks down. You'll probably have only about 1/5 the size of the pile that you initially started when you're finished, maybe even less than that, depending on the type of material put in. So it shrinks the volume of material dramatically. And that's one of the good reasons for composting, is it helps get rid of the yard waste in an environmentally friendly way. The other option, of course, for a lot of folks is to municipal composting facilities hauling material off. That is doable. Some municipalities they will pick up the material, the leaves, which is good. If you're out in the country, or if you're in a community, burning is an adequate way of getting rid of some of that material. And it's probably a very sanitary way of getting rid of it, because there you have a high enough heat that destroys the organisms. But you are missing out when you burn the material. You're missing out on all of the benefits of actually putting the organic residues back in the soil, because you're really losing the organic residues. But burning is one of the natural things that occurs. That's what keeps the prairies prairie. There's the fire. We can say some beneficial things about burning, but also be careful, because burning takes care of buildings and communities as well.
Right.
So we want to make sure that we don't have an issue with that. I do composting myself. It's not for everybody, like I said, because some folks don't have a place to compost or don't have the physical ability to compost. That's okay. We don't have to feel guilty about that. But if you're good at composting, you work that back into your garden and your flower bed and your lawn, and do a very good job of improving the soil.
And like I said, it just takes time. So obviously a lot of patience as well with composting.
Yeah, you don't have to babysit your compost pile. Now, some people like to do that initially, because their new gardeners will do that and go out and check the compost pile every day with a thermometer and make sure the temperature's coming up and getting all excited about that. Okay, I've been there, done that myself. So it's not bad. It's just one of the exciting things about being a gardener.
Absolutely. You were also, we were talking off air about fescue germination.
Planting a fescue lawn, yes. And it's that time of the year where some folks like to plant a new fescue lawn or maybe overseed. And so we want to think about putting grass into the soil. If we're going to plant a new lawn, of course, that seed bed preparation should have occurred already. We want to have the seed bed prepared just like we would have we're going to plant a garden. That soil should be clean, all the debris raked out of it, graded down to the level that we want, nice and smooth. And then, of course, seeding rate. We want about 2 to 3 pounds of good live fescue seed for every 1,000 square foot of area. Or Larry Leuthold years ago said about 13 seeds per square inch. That stuck in my head, 13 seeds per square inch. Okay, so we get the seed spread out on the ground. That's not good, because it's laying on top of the soil. We want to get it into the soil a little bit, so we need to kind of drag a little rake over top of it and rake it in, stir it into the soil. I want that seed to be in the soil maybe about a quarter inch deep. Now, some seeds going to be a little deeper than that, and some is going to be right on the surface, but when you get done, hopefully you have it mixed in nice and smooth and fairly uniform. And then after that, we want to keep that seed bed wet. We want to irrigate it lightly and soak it up every day, so we maintain it evenly moist soil. We don't want to put on this irrigation on so fast that it washes the seed out of the ground. And if we get a heavy rainfall, that could occur too. We can get seed off target. So we want to get it in a time when we probably don't have frequent rainfalls, but we'd also like to have enough moisture in the soil that it's not hard to keep that seed bed moist. So that may require some pre-irrigation before we actually get into the seeding process. I don't think that will be necessary this year so much, but that's some of the things we want to think about when we're seeding a new lawn, is get that seed mixed into the soil and get that irrigation on it. Some people spread a little bit of mulch on top of the seed bed. It's not necessary unless you have an area where your erosion is going to be kind of a significant issue. And then we want to put something really clean, a seed-free mulch on the top of the surface, and that's kind of hard to find. Wheat straw is not good because it contains a lot of wheat seed, and that will come up and compete with the lawn grass, and that's something we don't want to use. We might consider something like a good clean prairie hay, lightly spread, so that it just covers enough of the ground to keep it from eroding, but it has enough openness to it that it allows the seeds to germinate and the seedling plants to come up through that. So, okay.
All right. Well, again, we're speaking with Jacob Weber and Wendy Powell from the K-State Extension Office. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we will have some news, and then we will come back and we will talk to Wendy about grazing school coming up and weaning cattle. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Welcome back to Green Side Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. I'm Kyle High, and with me today from the state K-State Extension Office is Jacob Weber and Wendy Powell. We had Jacob on in the first half of the program. Now we're going to bring in Wendy Powell. She's the Livestock Production Agent at the K-State Extension Office. How are you doing this morning, Wendy?
I'm doing well, thank you.
All right, Wendy, you were wanting to talk about grazing school that's coming up.
Yes, so Cherokee County, Wildcat District, and Southwind District, we're all planning a Southeast Kansas grazing school. And that's going to take place in Fort Scott at the Repro Logix facility right there near Fort Scott. That's going to be September 28th. So we invite producers to come out to that. We've got some really nice sponsors, so we'll be providing some lunch for everyone. There's going to be a really great, several really great presentations covering cover crops, economics, rotational grazing, and then we'll have some tours as well, tours of the Repro Logix facility. And then we've got some farm tours lined up as well, some folks that do some rotational grazing and some innovative systems. So that'll be a really great program for folks to be able to come out and really get their boots on the ground and see what's going on at that place. So the registration is $10 per person, and we'll be providing a lunch for that. I'd like to go ahead and thank our sponsors. That's going to be Kansas Forage and Grassland Council, Repro Logix, Landmark National Bank, and K-State Research and Extension. So if you'd like to register for that event, you can contact the Wildcat Extension District and get signed up. Or if you just want to come out, that would be fine too. Pay at the door and we'll get you in.
All right. The other thing you wanted to talk about was, as we were talking off there, weaning cattle.
Yes. So as Jacob mentioned, it is fall. And so a lot of producers have spring calving cows that they're thinking about pulling those calves off at this time. We do recommend doing some preconditioning on those calves. So that's going to be some vaccinations for infectious diseases. That's going to help those calves as they come off the mama and they go through that really stressful period of weaning. If we can do some preconditioning for them through the weaning season, that's really going to make them more productive in the cow herd if they're heifers, or more efficient in the feedlot if we're sending them to market. So when we talk about preconditioning, we're talking about some vaccinations, of course, of those infectious diseases. There's six or seven, several if you want to really get down into it. We're talking about doing some deworming and fly control on them. Of course, castrating any of the bulls that you're not going to keep, dehorning any of the cattle that you've got horns on. These factors are all going to increase profits as well. So whenever you take them to market, if you market them through a special sale, certainly you can see some price premiums, or if you market them separately, just make for sure you tell that your buyers that that's what you've got going on. And these cattle are a little bit more valuable because they've got more immunity, they are going to last longer, and they're going to do better. So ideally, that's what we're looking for.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Is there any other tips you would like to give out there to people trying to wean cattle?
Sure. So whenever we talk about weaning, there's lots of different methods and practices and ways that folks like to do that. Some of them will just create a pen in the pasture, separate the calves, kick the cows back out, and haul the calves back to the home place, whatever works. But really, you might think about doing some fence line weaning if your facilities can manage that. Whenever we talk about fence line weaning, we're just putting the cows on one side and the calves on the other. So it's got to be a really great fence right there. But the benefits of that is those calves can still be right there next to mama, and it's just a little less stressful. But they're still depending on the producer to go out and make for sure that they've got fresh water, fresh feed, hay, things like that. And so they kind of, they get literally weaned off mama, and so they're kind of adjusting in that way. But being right there close just does reduce the stress quite a bit. So fence line weaning is a really great practice if your facilities can handle that.
And like you're saying, you're trying to wing the baby off the mama so they can be a good big cow on their own.
Right.
Going back to Jacob here real quick. Jacob, you were talking about earlier about blooming that's happening right now. Certain flowers that are blooming actually right about now.
Yep.
Okay, there we are. All right. Well, we can continue with the flowers. I enjoy the fall and enjoy seeing the season cycling. A lot of the plants that we see that are blooming now are perennial plants. Most of the annual plants are actually reading a really nice book about the native Kansas plants, and forgot the name of it. But one of the things that mentioned in a prairie situation is the fact that the perennial plants are more adapted to surviving on the prairie because they have their reproductive the living part that's going to produce a new plant every year is essentially at ground or below ground level, the crown of the plant, the root system. And so it's very adapted to fire because occasionally you have fires that will clean the nasty stuff off of the prairie. Number one would be the cedar trees. Is that right, Wendy?
Correct. Yeah, get rid of those things.
Yeah, because cedars are one of the early invaders, the tree invaders into a prairie. Very tough plant, but very susceptible to fire when they're small. Once they get some size to them, then they're more resistant to fire, and that's when you start having issues, your loss of prairie. But the perennial plants are much more adapted to surviving in the prairie situation. Not exclusively, I believe Leavenworth laryngeo is an annual plant that comes back year after year from seed. But pitcher sage is perennial. Maximilian sunflower is perennial. Soon, about another month, another one called a willow leaf sunflower is going to start blooming. That actually doesn't look like a sunflower until it produces the flower itself, but that is in the sunflower family, the Helianthus, the Helianthus genus. And there's a number of sunflowers that we have here in the area. Some of them bloom earlier in the season. The annual sunflower, typically what we see is an annual plant that comes from seed. You typically see that particular plant that grows in ditches and other areas where the soil is broken or the prairie is broken, where some of the native grasses the soil is disturbed, so it gives them an opportunity to germinate and grow. But they'll also grow and compete with the native plants as well. So that's some of the things that I watch for. And of course, if you're always interested in that, there's lots of good books. There's Kansas Native Plant Society. You can join that and be a member of that and go on some of the wildflower tours, which are very nice. I haven't gone on very many because I hate sugars. That's one of the things that are probably going to attract chiggers is me being out in with them, because I know for certain that within an area probably the size of a football field, that if there's a chigger on the far end of the football field and there's me on the other end, that chigger's going to start crawling right in my direction because they like me that much.
They do the same thing to me, too.
Okay. So, yeah, okay.
Speaking of prescribed burning, Jacob, now is a good time if you've got brush in your pasture to do some control with fire on those. So any other woody type species, also blackberries, any type of trees that you've been trying to get rid of, hedge, for example, now would be a good time to go ahead and burn that off. So the humidity is high enough right now to keep that fire low and hot, and it'll really take care of that wood that we have trouble with burning in the springtime because it's so wet. And then also, right now, we've still got a little bit of growing season left. So if you go ahead and burn a pasture, then there's still some time that some growth can come back on that before we get, hopefully, heavy precipitation in the winter and prevent some erosion issues.
You do need certain conditions to get a good hot fire, though, don't you?
You're looking for a certain wind direction.
Or fuel.
Yes.
You need fuel, dry fuel.
Dry fuel, yeah, it's going to be hard. Yeah. If you're going to plan on it this weekend, you better watch the weather for that. But dry fuel, yes. You're looking for a low wind speed in the direction that you're needing to take the smoke away from any roads or houses or communities that you might be close to.
Yeah, and also you would do that in a pasture or a meadow that would not be overly grazed, because you need that biomass, dry biomass, to get a good hot fire. And I guess I understand that it's kind of helpful in some situations to control ceresia.
So with ceresia control this time of year, I'd recommend doing some chemical control with a metsulfuron product like Escort. But if you wanted to do some burning, yes, that is a great opportunity to do some non-herbicide options on ceresia control. And you'll want to do that in the spring. Make sure you've got some cattle that can follow that burn, because that ceresia will come right back. But cattle will eat. Cattle, goats, lots of other species will eat ceresia when it's young and tender. And then you'll just want to make for sure that you're keeping that plant low and small so that animals will eat it and it doesn't go to seed. Because when it goes to seed, it's going to spread and make it that much worse for next year.
The seed's very persistent. Is that right?
Very. 20 or 30 years in the soil. It's a very hard seed.
Wow. Yeah, that's a long time. If you guys are up for it, we can go ahead and put our phone number out there if you'd like to take some calls. Our number is 251-6909 or 1-800-252-5443 if you'd like to give Jacob or Wendy a call. If you have any questions for them, go ahead and give us a call. You were talking a little bit also about just overall germination that's happening right now. Overall, I was trying to get that out of my mouth.
Okay, for getting seed to germinate in
yes.
the lawn. Yep, we want the conditions suitable. It's real important to get the seed into the soil itself. Now, some folks overseed. And overseeding, one of the big difficulties is actually getting the seed down into the soil. There's some equipment called a slot seeder that will actually cut a groove into the turf, through the turf, and make an opening into the soil. You have to have things adjusted right with this, and it'll put the seed right down into that to that slot. It's a piece of equipment. Probably is a piece of equipment you don't want to buy just to use it on your own lawn, because it's very expensive. But there are some rental agencies, possibly, I don't know for sure, that have that type of equipment that you could rent and utilize. It does require a crisscross planting of the lawn itself, but it does a very good job. It does pull up a lot of debris, and that'll lay on top of the lawn. You'll have to rake that up or somehow remove it. Another option is to power rake the fescue lawn. This is not a good time to power rake the summer lawn. So grasses such as Bermuda grass and Zoysia grass, it's very damaging to those grasses. But since fescue is beginning its fall growth cycle right now, it's a very beneficial time to power rake and remove some of the thatch and debris. But it's also essential for getting that lawn or that turf open enough so you can get the seed down into the soil. In that case, you could spread the seed over top. Once you remove all the debris, it's going to be a lot of it, so you need to go someplace with it. That's why composting is good. or maybe hauling it off to a composting facility, municipal composting facility. There's a lot of issues associated with overseeding. This is a good time to overseed. We have another option of overseeding later in the season called dormant overseeding. That can be done usually between Christmas and New Year's is a good time to do it. If you're tired of being close to all the relatives and family members and you really want to get outside and it's kind of nice outside, it's something you can do. Go outside. I got to go out and overseed the lawn, and everybody looks at you with a big question mark, really? And so, yeah, it's a good excuse to say, I can't stand you anymore, so I got to get outside and do something. So, well, that doesn't usually happen on Christmas time or that time of the year. Yeah, but if it does, it's a possible excuse. I got to go out and overseed. So remember that. It's a good time to overseed. It's called dormant seeding. You're putting the seed into the soil at a time when it will not germinate because the soil is too cold. And because you got in the soil at that time, it starts, you got it planted early enough so that when the soil starts to warm up, it'll germinate and grow and actually get that grass plant established early enough into the next growing season that it will actually be able to survive the summer. The other option, of course, is seeding in the spring. And usually by the time we get a seed bed prepared in the spring, we are delayed by frequent rainfalls. It can be pushed so far into the spring that we don't get it in time. So that's why dormant seeding is maybe a valuable way of overseeding a lawn.
Keep going.
I'm done. Okay.
Oh, okay. I had a quick question real quick. I moved here just about 2 weeks ago. I have a very small yard where my trailer's at. But it's covered up by a tree most of the day and also by the other trailers around it. So the grass is kind of dead. Look at what can I do about a lawn that's covered, it seems like, most of the day that doesn't receive a whole lot of sunlight?
In that situation, you probably just plant a temporary grass like annual ryegrass, something that comes up. It'll die over the winter, or you can do perennial ryegrass. It's a cheap grass. It's temporary. Those two grasses really are not good turf grasses, but it's something that you could put out, quick germination, or you could actually plant some fescue and kind of seed it in. It looks good for a little bit until the plants die. Or you can just go as is and let grow whatever grows, mow it. And sometimes too much shade, that's the problem. And of course, out in the prairie with all the cedar trees, that's the problem with prairies. Prairie grasses and turf grasses are high light requiring plants. And if they don't get that light, they start to suffer and they start to die. But of course, out in the prairie, the grasses have a one up on the other plants because the top part can be burned.
Right.
They can survive. And the fire is not good for certain types of woody plants. They're not very good at all.
Absolutely. Well, guys, hey, it was great having you guys in today, talking about all the great things happening. And again, Wendy, if you'd like to talk about that grazing school just one more time, if you'd like to put out that information for people so they can check that out.
September 28th at Repro Logics near Fort Scott. If you want to get signed up, you can call the Wildcat Extension District, or you can check out our website. We've got flyers on our Facebook page as well. So September 28th, Repro Logic. It's going to be a really great opportunity to get to know some other producers and see some really cool ideas.
You didn't happen to have the directions to that place?
I do not.
Okay. All right. Call Wendy after.
That's right. Give me a call and I'll look them up.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, you have a fantastic day. And thank you again for coming in today.
Thanks for hosting us.
All right. That is Jacob Weber and Wendy Powell from the K-State Extension Office. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to kick off open line right here on the mighty 690 KGGF. Right now, here's your Mid-America Ag Network report.